This is an ABC podcast.
I know we've got disabilities, but we're not stupid. We can see what this is, and it's not equity. You can wrap it up and put it in a ribbon, but it's not that. It is really about cost cutting. And I mean, like, it was recent where they kind of turned around and went, oh, you know, we've saved so much money out of the NDIS, we're going to redistribute it over here. It's like, yeah, you saved it because you don't fund people appropriately.
Nearly 500,000 Australians living with a disability have been put on notice. The National Disability Insurance Scheme, or NDIS, which they rely on for support, is going to change. The federal government says it's all about making the scheme fairer for everyone. But is that really the full picture? I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre.
And I'm Stephen Smiley. And today on The Signal, what is the government planning to do to the NDIS? Is it the right move? Or is it all about cutting costs?
Minister, good morning.
Ray, good to talk to you. Never thought you and I'd be talking about prostitutes.
No, not in these terms.
So this is Stuart Robert, the Minister for the National Disability Insurance Scheme. And for months now, he has been busy pointing out in media interviews all the ways in which, in his view, the scheme is deficient. A case he has raised a few times now involves a woman living with multiple sclerosis whom the federal court ruled last year was entitled to access a sex worker using NDIS funds. And if you ask Stuart Robert, it's proof the system needs fixing.
But I wouldn't have thought in any legislation that was framed, it would have extended to sexual services for people with funding from the NDIS.
You're spot on, Ray. We all want to take care of Australians with disability, and the NDIS is a fabulous national endeavour. Mm. But the legislation is silent when it defines reasonable and necessary, so the federal court has said, therefore, most things are permissible, including paying for prostitutes. Now, the Commonwealth has never paid for prostitutes. It's never used taxpayers' money, and nor have the states and territories. So the Commonwealth will now make a principal decision because we don't believe that taxpayers' funds should be used for prostitution services.
Now, the woman at the centre of the case spoke to the Guardian website over the weekend, accusing Stuart Robert of trying to use her case to distract from broad changes to the NDIS that he's pushing, which she says are less about quality and more about cost-cutting. So what exactly is the government proposing to change?
Okay, well, that's still a bit unclear, but we'll set out what we know. So for several years now, Stuart Robert has been piloting something called independent assessments, essentially a mechanism to check up on what an individual is receiving under the NDIS. And there are also suggestions that the government will look to tighten up which kinds of situations are eligible for support on the NDIS. For example, a leaked draft of a bill published in the Nine newspapers on Friday, which was also shared by the Labor spokesman Bill Shorten over the weekend, seemed to suggest that people with acquired brain injuries or with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder might become ineligible for NDIS-funded services. Although Stuart Robert insists that's all just a draft, one of at least 78 different versions, apparently, and the details are all still being worked out.
Yeah, so for an overview of all of this, as well as a primer on how the NDIS actually works at the moment, we called in Naz Campanella. She's the ABC's Disability Affairs reporter.
Okay, so let's start by just explaining, if you can, for us, Naz, the way under the NDIS at the moment funding is determined.
So at the moment, people basically gather all the different medical reports and letters from their various doctors and specialists, and they submit those, and that essentially is a form of assessment for determining whether someone is eligible or not to be in the scheme, or whether their funding is continued and what level of funding and supports they continue to receive within the scheme if they're already a participant.
Right. So it's an expert assessment, basically, of what a person, what sorts of supports a person might need.
Yeah, so you'll get the various specialist reports and letters from your doctors who you have been working with probably for almost your entire life in some cases. So you might have your whole team that submits something that talks about a few things: your diagnosis, the supports you need, what impact your disability has on you day to day. And that's, in a sense, how things are determined at the moment. Now, there's been some criticism around the fact that some people are spending tens of thousands of dollars on these reports and gathering all this information and material, and independent assessments have been, you know, proposed or discussed as a way of breaking that down and ensuring that the scheme is fair and equitable for everyone, so that people aren't going around and spending these thousands of dollars to gather all this information.
We've got some exciting tourism and travel announcements today, of course, but also welcoming Stuart here today to talk about some important work that's being undertaken in the NDIS space. Stuart.
Yeah, thanks, Bridge. I'll just couple past you. It is great to be in Launceston.
So the Minister, Stuart Robert, was touring Tasmania a couple of weeks ago. He was visiting an NDIS provider there, and he spoke about this topic at length. He pointed out, for example, that an NDIS participant with a plan, say in Hobart, would their average plan would be worth around $105,000. Now, that's in comparison to someone, say in Launceston, whose plan might be worth $80,000.
Why is it the average plan right here in Launceston is 20% lower than in the capital city in Tasmania? Why do we see disparities of 40 and 45% in South Australia and right across the country? Why does your postcode determine your package? And it shouldn't.
He says that this is just not fair and equitable, and these assessments will make the system more equitable for all Australians with disability. He also pointed out that the assessments have always been in the plan for the scheme. They were an original building block of the scheme.
The Productivity Commission, when it actually built the scheme in 2011, strongly recommended independent assessments, as have multiple reviews, including the Tune Review.
So as we said earlier, the proposal for these independent assessments that Stuart Robert has been talking up has actually been piloted for several years now. So to hear about how that has been working, we found someone who knows firsthand.
So can I ask you just to introduce yourself, your full name, your position, and where you're speaking to us in the country from, if you could?
Yeah, sure. My name's Aaron. I'm the director of my own company, and I'm talking to you from Western Sydney.
And on top of that company that Aaron mentioned, it's called Motivate Disability Services. Aaron is also a participant in the NDIS himself, getting support for his autism.
It was a bit of a catastrophe. I've got autism, and they sent a physiotherapist to assess autism, which kind of doesn't make sense because a physiotherapist looks at your physical domains, not your neurological. And the interaction with him was very not a really good experience. It was pretty nightmarish, really.
Walk us through that. So he came out to your house. You had an appointment time locked in. How did things go from there?
Start with the appointment time. Our appointment time was 11, and he arrived at 10:45 and just kind of, you know, proceeded to knock on the door, and we weren't quite ready for him. So from that point, we've let him into the house and, you know, take a seat. Without asking, he's plugged into our power, started setting up his laptop, and my partner and I were like, well, have we started? And he's like, oh, no, look, I'm just setting up my computer. You go ahead and perform a task. And, you know, we just kind of looked at him and went, what task? What do you want me to perform a task?
And it's quite nerve-wracking, right, because this person is coming into your home to essentially assess the level of support that you should be offered from the NDIS. So you don't know in this interaction what is being, as you say, is part of the assessment that he's there to conduct.
Yeah. We asked for certain explanations. I was like, well, does this question relate to mobility, or does it relate to how I cope with the situation? And the answer was just like, well, that's the question.
And what sort of ground did you cover over that period of time with this person who identified himself as being a physiotherapist? What were in these yes, no questions that you're describing?
I mean, they were fairly basic. So ones were kind of, you know, can you take out the bin? Can you catch public transport? And when we went in to try and explain how that looks for me, like, I've nearly been arrested at an airport once because I wasn't coping with what was going on around me at the airport, and my behaviour, you know, kind of escalated. And when we tried to explain that to him, he actually turned around and said, well, planes aren't public transport. So it's kind of like, well, you'll need to specify what public transport is then, which he wouldn't, you know. So I guess there's that kind of thing where it's like, well, there's context behind these questions. There were other ones like, you know, can you shower yourself? Can you dress yourself? Now, the answer is, yeah, I can dress myself. But if there's something missing in that routine in the morning, like if I have socks missing, it stops me for about half an hour until I figure out where the socks are, what socks I should be wearing. I had an idea in my head what was, you know, if you can kind of, I hate to use the example, but a bit of Sheldon, you know, when that kind of situation gets thrown and he doesn't get his seat and how upsetting that is, that's kind of, you know, that's the life of many autistic people when there's something out of whack. And trying to explain that to the physio just didn't happen. He didn't want to hear it.
So as you can hear, from Aaron's experience at least, the independent assessment process itself has the potential to be fairly alienating and awful. And on top of the difficulties that some people might experience with the question and answer process itself, there's also the worry that if you screw up an answer, you'll lose support.
Yeah, and look, in Aaron's case, he managed to get a copy of what his assessor found. And he says, because this independent assessment process is still at this trial stage, he didn't lose any support on his NDIS plan. There was no change at all. But he's worried about what happens when it stops being a pilot and it starts being real.
When I did ask for it, the independent assessment company that provided the assessment didn't know whether they could release it. They basically said, no, we can't. And then I kicked up a stink and said, well, it's my information that breaches the Privacy Act. And then I think they approached the NDIS and the NDIS said, yes, you can. So it took about a week for me to get the information back after the assessment. And then it did come back from the NDIS themselves, from kind of like a client manager or something like that, a client officer, relations officer. But that information, and this is where this pilot is flawed as well, it didn't provide, and I did ask for this, it didn't provide a draft plan, I guess. So the whole thing with the NDIS is that you put your assessments in, you have a planning meeting, and then the planner goes away with all the information that they're provided and they produce a plan. And that plan will tell you what you've been funded for that year, what your goal, based on what your goals are, et cetera. So my question back to the NDIS was, well, where's a copy of the draft plan that this assessment would produce? And they basically went, no, we're not doing that. No, that's not part of the pilot. And I kind of went, well, that's kind of like having a TV show pilot that goes for 40 minutes and then you're asking me to assess the entire program and tell you whether I liked it when it's a 60-minute program.
So in your case, you're on the plan that you were before all of this happened and you don't really understand how this independent assessment process could ultimately affect the kinds of services that are funded in your case.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, ultimately, the person with a disability is going to be sitting at the end of that going, if I went through this independent assessment, what is the plan that I would get? And I think, you know, if Stuart Robert had thought this out and actually gone all the way through to producing a plan and saying, you know, these independent assessments will get you this, here's the equity in it, guys, and it actually does produce an equitable plan, we might be sitting there having a different conversation going, these IA are going to be good for us because X. But he's not doing that. And that's where you kind of sit there and go, look, you can paint it up all you want and call it something else. But I think, you know, we might have disabilities, but we're not stupid. Like, I think that's the crux of it.
And in your situation then, Aaron, you don't know whether through this process you might have got a better targeted set of supports or whether you would have lost some of the supports that you are currently provided. Is that right? You just don't know what this process would have yielded if it were kind of formally and officially rolled out.
Yeah, 100%, don't know.
Now, Aaron's experience with the independent assessment process obviously raises a few questions, but to be fair to the government, this is just a trial at the moment. And Stuart Robert says the government is still refining how it's going to work.
Yeah, and at the press conference in Tasmania that we heard from before, the minister addressed some of the other issues Aaron raised too.
But do you understand that it could be concerning for someone with a disability to tell a stranger about their disability, their life with a disability in just a three-hour session?
Well, the independent assessments will run for as long as they need to go. So we're talking about up to 3 hours, but they'll take as long as they need to. Of the 430,000 participants, of course, 50% are receiving supports for the very first time. Imagine that, Australians for the very first time receiving support. I don't want those Australians spending tens of thousands of dollars, and I don't want them missing out.
The disability sector says they were not consulted before their assessments were introduced. What do you say to that?
Well, the Productivity Commission recommended it 10 years ago. The first trials began in 2018. We're doing the second trial now. So this is now 2.5 coming into 3 years. We've been talking about it. We've been engaging with it. I've been speaking about it for 2 years, and we've been trialling it for over 2.5 years.
Is this all about cost cutting?
It's about fairness.
But as you might imagine, disability advocacy groups are less than convinced, which is a message NAS has heard a lot.
Who is conducting this independent assessment?
So the independent assessments will be conducted by allied health professionals. So we're talking here things like speech pathologists, physiotherapists, occupational therapists, those sorts of professionals. There's been, criticism and concern really building from the disability community. And it really has culminated in the last couple of weeks with a letter from 20 peak disability organisations basically calling for these independent assessments to stop. They say that there's been a lack of consultation around them. They say that it's a real tick-a-box type exercise. And they say that people are really concerned that supports that they've been fighting for years will be lost in this process. There's a lot of concern around particularly people with cognitive disabilities. So in that case, we're talking about things like acquired brain injury, intellectual disability, or autism, where people might not necessarily represent accurately. So for example, you might ask someone, do you go to the shops on your own? And the person might answer yes, but they don't let you know that they need support to cross the road to get to the shops. So it's those sorts of nuances that people are concerned about, that those allied health professionals will be quite junior and won't understand those nuances to give an accurate picture.
Now, as you mentioned before, one of the other things the government says is that this was an original part of the scheme. This was always the plan all along with the NDIS. So is this a pilot? Is this a test run? Or is this just the start of a bigger rollout?
So there's currently the second trial underway, and the legislation will be put to Parliament in coming months, introducing this into Parliament. And then, we'll wait and see what happens.
And in terms of the NDIS, I think broadly people understand that the NDIS has meant that new services that people were previously not able to access or afford are now part of what they can expect, to be subsidised by the taxpayer in essence. Can you just give us a sense about how different the NDIS is to what was there before and how big a change this could be to the way it works?
Yeah, look, people have time and time again talked to me about how positive the NDIS has been for them. People have been receiving, in some cases, support for the very first time.
Yeah.
And I think at the heart of this issue is the disability community. It is the people who the NDIS supports who are concerned about this, because many of them have said, we waited 20 years, we fought for 20 years to get access to an independent living scenario for our child. We're finally at that point, and they're really fearful that that's going to now be taken away. That's some of the real fear that people hold. And the NDIS has been transformative for so many people. It's provided them access to the community in many cases for the first time, access to work, to supported living, to supported employment, to social activities. It's been tremendously vital in ensuring that people with disability have equal access to a beautiful and rich life like any other Australian.
That's the signal for today. We'll be back in your feed at the same time tomorrow. We will catch you then.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.